In January 1998, the Midwives Journal published an article by Terry Coates entitled Impressions of a Midwife in Literature. After careful research right across European and English language writing, Terry was forced to conclude that midwives are virtually non-existent in literature. Why, in heaven's name? Fictional doctors grace the pages of books in droves, scattering pearls of wisdom as they pass. Nurses, good and bad, are by no means absent, but midwives? Whoever heard of a midwife as a literary heroine? Yet midwifery is the very stuff of drama. Every child is conceived either in love or lust, is born in pain, followed by joy or sometimes remorse. A midwife is in the thick of it. She sees it all. Why then does she remain a shadowy figure, hidden behind the delivery room door? Terry Coates finished her article with a lament for the neglect of such an important profession. I read her words, accepted the challenge, and took up my pen. Introduction. Nonartis House was situated in the heart of the London Docklands. The practice covered Stepney, Limehouse, Millwall, the Isle of Dogs, Cubitt Town, Poplar, Bow, Mile End, and Whitechapel. The area was densely populated, and most families had lived there for generations, often not moving more than a street or two away from their birthplace. Family life was lived at close quarters, and children were brought up by a widely extended family of aunts, grandparents, cousins, and older siblings, all living within a few houses, or at the most, streets, of each other. Children would run in and out of each other's homes all the time, and when I lived and worked there, I cannot remember a door ever being locked, except at night. Children were everywhere, and the streets were their playgrounds. In the 1950s, there were no cars in the back streets, because no one had a car, so it was perfectly safe to play there. There was heavy industrial traffic on the main roads, particularly those leading to and from the docks, but the little streets were traffic-free. The bomb sites were the adventure playgrounds. They were numerous, a terrible reminder of the war and the intense bombing of the Docklands only 10 years before. Great chunks had been cut out of the terraces, each encompassing perhaps two or three streets. The area would be roughly boarded off, partly hiding a wasteland of rubble with bits of building half standing, half fallen. Perhaps a notice stating danger, keep out, would be nailed up somewhere, but this was like a red rag to a bull to any lively lad over the age of about 6 or 7. And every bomb site had secret entries where the boarding was carefully removed, allowing a small body to squeeze through. Officially, no one was allowed in, but everyone, including the police, seemed to turn a blind eye. It was undoubtedly a rough area. Knifings were common. Street fights were common. Pub fights and brawls were an everyday event. In the small, overcrowded houses, domestic violence was expected. But I never heard of gratuitous violence towards children or the elderly. There was a certain respect for the weak. This was the time of the Cray brothers, gang warfare, vendettas, organised crime and intense rivalry. The police were everywhere and never walked the beat alone. Yet I never heard of an old lady being knocked down and having her pension stolen, or of a child being abducted and murdered. The vast majority of the men living in the area worked in the docks. Employment was high, but wages were low and the hours were long. The men holding the skilled jobs had relatively high pay and regular hours, and their jobs were fiercely guarded. Their skills were usually kept in the family, passed from father to sons or nephews. But for the casual labourers, life must have been hell. There would be no work when there were no boats to unload, and the men would hang around the gates all day, smoking and quarrelling. But when there was a boat to unload, it would mean 14, perhaps 18 hours of relentless manual labour,